This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Borscht Club on ORFM, where we stir up vibrant stories, rich traditions, and the voices of the Ukrainian community. Grab a seat, it's time to dive into something truly special. Вітаю! Як справи? Hello! How are you? Shall we continue learning Ukrainian words? You already know how to greet someone and ask how they are doing. So now let's add a bit more linguistic insight to our study of Ukrainian. The Ukrainian alphabet has 33 letters, and some of them, like G, Е, Ї, are unique to the language. Each letter is pronounced as it's written, well, almost always, and clearly too. So, if you know the alphabet and see a word, you will likely be able to read it with ease. In Ukrainian, there is no strict word order. That's why I never understood why people laughed at Yoda's speech in Star Wars. From a Ukrainian perspective, he actually spoke quite normally. We can even turn a statement into a question simply by changing the intonation, without changing the word order. For example, «Ти слухаєш борщ клуб?» You are listening to Borscht Club. Ти слухаєш Борщ клуб? Are you listening to Borscht Club? Exact same word order, just a change in tone. Every object or living being in Ukrainian has a grammatical gender, masculine, feminine, or neuter. For example, стіл – table, masculine – чашка – cup, feminine – немовля – baby, neuter, regardless of biological gender. The same goes for animals – kit – male cat, кішка – female cat. Кошеня, kitten, neuter. Ukrainian is a living, emotional, and flexible language that lets you create your own world through words. For instance, you can express tenderness just with a suffix. Listen to this. Кіт, котик, котусик, котусечко. And if it's a big cat, we might call it котище. All these refer to the same cat with different emotional color. The same goes for names. We have full names and diminutives, and they don't always sound alike. Often they don't even share the same letters, but they still refer to the same person. For example, Олександр can be Сашко, Олекса, Лесик. Or take Ольга. It might become Оля, Оленька, or even Льоля. I once had a friend named Софія, but everyone called her Зося. Even I found that surprising. So don't be shocked if a Ukrainian calls themselves by a different name every time. It might still be the same name deep down. Today Ukrainians are not only fighting for their independence, but are also making history on a global scale. The names of Ukrainian soldiers, artists, journalists, writers, and volunteers resonate worldwide, inspiring and capturing hearts. But Ukraine's influence didn't begin in the 21st century. For centuries, talented, bold, and creative Ukrainians have left their mark across continents. I will tell you stories about Ukrainians abroad. First one is a story about Anne of Kiev, the Ukrainian Queen of France. She was a Ukrainian princess and Queen of France, born in 9th century. The daughter of Yaroslav the Wise, Grand Prince of Kiev, Anne was one of the most remarkable women of the Middle Ages, leaving an enduring legacy that showcased Ukraine's influence across Europe. Anne was highly educated, fluent in 5 languages, a rarity for women of her time. In 1051, she married King Henry I of France, becoming not only his wife, but also a significant political figure. She was the mother of King Philip I of France and played a vital role in the French court. As a queen, Anne was actively involved in the governance of the kingdom. She participated in the royal council, influenced both internal and foreign policy, and supported the development of churches and monasteries. Her intellectual prowess and leadership skills were so respected that she corresponded directly with Pope Nicholas II, a remarkable feat for any woman of her era. Anne's legacy goes beyond her lifetime. She became the ancestor of nearly 30 French kings, securing her place in European history. There was also the Ukrainian queen of the Ottoman Empire, Roxolana, Hürrem Sultan. Анастасія Лісовська, born in the small town of Rogatin in Galicia in western Ukraine, is known to history as Roxolana. She rose from being a captive to becoming one of the most influential women in the world. Her journey is extraordinary. She became the first and only woman in Ottoman history to hold the official title of Hürrem Haseki Sultan, earning a place of unprecedented power and respect. Another outstanding Ukrainian woman, Kvitka Cisyk, was a remarkable singer of Ukrainian descent who achieved fame in the United States while keeping her Ukrainian roots close to her heart. Born in New York City to parents who had immigrated from Ukraine, Kvitka grew up surrounded by music. By the way, Kvitka means flower. Her father, a professional violinist, inspired her passion for singing. Kvitka's voice became iconic in American advertising, featured in commercials for brands like McDonald's, Coca-Cola, and Ford Motors. But Kvitka's heart was always with Ukraine. She recorded two Ukrainian language albums, Songs of Ukraine and Two Colors, blending her rich vocals with traditional folk music. These albums earned Grammy nominations and introduced the beauty of Ukrainian culture to audiences around the world. Mila Jovovich, Hollywood star with Ukrainian roots. She emigrated to United States with her family at the age of 5, where she launched her successful acting career. Mila visited Ukraine multiple times. During Ukraine's Revolution of Dignity, she openly supported Ukrainians, urging her fans to donate funds to help those affected on Maidan Square. Andy Warhol, born Andriy Vargola, became a legend in his lifetime by turning advertising into high art. Known as the father of pop art, he was born in the United States to a Ukrainian family. Warhol's creativity had no bounds. He created advertisements, directed films, published magazines, and even ran his own TV channel. His iconic works, including Coca-Cola, 8 Elvises, and Marilyn Monroe, remain cultural milestones. One of the co-founders of the iconic Apple company was Steve Wozniak. He has roots tracking back to Ukrainian region Bukovina through his father. The story of Apple began with a school friendship between Wozniak and Steve Jobs. Vera Farmiga, a celebrated Hollywood actress, takes immense pride in her Ukrainian heritage and actively supports Ukraine. From a young age, Vera embraced her cultural roots. She attended a Ukrainian Catholic school, was a member of the Ukrainian scouting organization PLAST, and even performed in a Ukrainian folk dance group. During the Euromaidan Revolution of Dignity, Vera voiced her solidarity with Ukrainians. In 2022, after Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, Vera took to social media to read Vasyl Simonenko's poem "People Are Beautiful" in Ukrainian, showing support for her homeland. She declared, "My Ukrainians, my friends, we hear you, we see you, and we stand in solidarity with you." She also encouraged Americans to educate themselves about Ukraine's struggle for freedom by watching the Oscar-nominated documentary Winter on Fire, Ukraine's Fight for Freedom. These days, almost every Ukrainian feels they can't stay on the sidelines. Everyone is helping Ukraine in any way they can. There aren't many Ukrainians in New Zealand, but we are loud, active, and advocate for Ukraine every single day. We continue our series introducing Ukrainians living in New Zealand, and today our guest is Anatoly Khorozov. Hi, thank you for agreeing to talk with us. Tell us about yourself. How did you end up in New Zealand?
I actually called New Zealand Embassy in Moscow and said, well, what do I need to come? And they said, well, you need this and this and this. And it was easy. And we applied and we just got residence in, like, I don't know, 3 months or something. So that was it.
When did you arrive?
We came in 2002, so it would be 23 years, 24. Well, it will be 24 in March.
What do you do in New Zealand?
What do I do now in New Zealand? I run business of first aid training. I was in this field for a long time, more than a decade, and also coach high school.
Did you have a profession on the skill shortage list, or was it generally easier to immigrate at that time?
There was no shortlisted professions like they have now. There was still like criteria of education, age, experience, English, and something along those lines. Yeah, and with my education, that was so easy because I had master's degree in health. and an experience. Yeah, so there was, I got all the points pretty much straight away. And then English was not a problem because I used to live in England before for a couple of years. So my English was okay. And yeah, so we just, it was easier compared to, because we were thinking of going to United States. It was difficult. Canada was extremely difficult. Australia was somewhat difficult. And New Zealand was just easiest out of all of them.
Some people moved to Australia after getting their New Zealand citizenship, but you stayed. Why?
We were thinking of going to Australia after earthquake because it was tough time in Christchurch after like big earthquake because it was a lot of uncertainty. Those shakes were going on and on and on and on for a long time, so it was really stressful. But then it kind of settled down and we didn't go. So why we stayed? I guess we always had something to do here. That's why we never really had to go for a better life, I guess.
I heard that that earthquake was terrible. But there are often small quakes in Christchurch, right? Have you gotten used to them?
No, I mean, we had shakes, but to be honest, we didn't even notice them until Jana's mom called us in the morning, like, are you okay? So, like, what do you mean? Well, you kind of had a shake. We didn't even know about this, to be honest. They had the news that we had shake. We didn't even feel it. But there were small ones. I didn't even know we had them. But then we had one in September, which was quite strong. And then we had the February one, which was the major one. And it was scary. I was actually on the square, like literally in the cathedral square when it happened. So it was not fun, I can tell you that. And then after this, we had, like, we went through hundreds of thousands of those aftershocks, and that was really, you know, get under your skin because it's just like, you know, you hear this little thing and then you don't know how strong it's gonna be, so you kind of like sit and say, oh, that was an easy one. Yes, yeah, so it was a bit, it was not pleasant, I can tell you that. Yeah, but then I'm just kind of settled and stuff. Yeah.
What do you love most about New Zealand?
Well, it's laid back. So New Zealand is laid back, people are laid back, everything is kind of laid back, easy going. So that's what I probably like the most.
What do you like about Dunedin?
What do I like in Dunedin? Well, Dunedin is an interesting place, yeah. It's like a student city, yeah. What I like in Dunedin, and Dunedin is very like an old, and because I said that I lived in England for, like, not England, in Scotland actually. For some time. It's very English-like city, if you like. Yeah, so that's an interesting, it's like, you know that it's not like any other city. Like, quite often, because I travel a lot, you drive to some small town and they all kind of look like one another. Whether Dunedin is different.
How is it different?
Well, it's different, so you know it's Dunedin, that's what I'm saying. Like, architecture, buildings, like in the city center, all that stuff is, it's authentic, you know, it's Dunedin, not like, oh, the main street is the same to any other main street. So Dunedin main street is not the same. You have, you know, all this kind of landmarks and stuff. Plus, all this sceneries and dunes and beaches in Dunedin, quite interesting too.
Tell us about your coaching career.
I played hockey since I was 7, just because I loved it. And then, when you play, then you coach, and I've coached those two. I coach kids back home. And then we came to New Zealand. I didn't even know ice hockey was here in New Zealand before we came. I mean, I actually sent them a letter to a local federation. I said, well, we're coming to New Zealand. So, oh, yeah, we kind of have ice hockey here, so which was a surprise. And then, and it actually worked out because we stayed, when we came to New Zealand, to Christchurch, we did not know anyone. Like, not a single person in Christchurch we knew. And the people from ice hockey community actually hosted us for the first 10 days. We stayed at their place when we came. And it was kind of cool. And then there was a school holiday. So I helped to coach little kids here on the ice. Yeah, and then I coached a few teams here. I coached the national team. I coached 18s and 20s and all those teams over the years. But it's not like... That's like a hobby. Yeah, so you're not really doing this for a living. Yeah. But I also coach professional in the UK and a couple of years in Kazakhstan.
What achievements have you had, or your teams?
Well, we had a few medals in Worlds. We had silvers and bronze a few times. So I have like a collection of medals back home. My personal achievement, I was a Soviet Union champion in 86, which was a cool back then. And UK, we didn't really win anything, but we were playing in the kind of top division.
You left Ukraine a long time ago. Do you still stay connected?
Yeah, I do support Ukraine, and it's easy in terms of connection because all the communication, they have social medias and everything. I still have friends and some family back there. Yeah, of course we were in touch, and you kind of talk to them once in a while and stuff like this. Like, I'm 55 now, 25 years here, well, kind of 25, so like half life almost here. So I'm not sure whether it's more Ukrainian or New Zealander. But yeah, I support Ukraine and I do talk to them. So I know what's going on. I talk to people. I talk to my friends, my classmates and schoolmates, and not pleasant time for them.
What do you do to support Ukraine?
Well, a lot of small things. I always say I can do a lot more. I usually help what I can with what we do in the Ukrainian community, just put those little things for the containers and just help them with those fundraisers when I can. It's really small things, but I guess a lot of small things do help a lot.
Tell us more about the container project. I don't think it's a small thing at all. It sounds like a significant effort.
If you look at the scale, it's a small thing. It's a lot for us. For the community we have in New Zealand, it's not a small thing. But for the stuff going on in Ukraine, it's a small thing. It's like a drop in the sea. But we just do what we can. And I'm just always kind of thinking that if we do have a lot of those small drops from all over the world, it does make a big difference.
How can New Zealanders help?
People donating things and people getting things. Sometimes people call and bring things in, and ladies doing those markets and other fundraisings, like selling some Ukrainian foods or doing some other things just to get some money. Because it's not just getting things for the container, but it's cost a lot to send this container there too. So we're talking about tens of thousands of dollars to send 40-foot container to Ukraine. So it's not just getting stuff to fill in container, but it's also to raise money to send us to Ukraine. And then there's a whole bunch of volunteers on the other end who's helping with distributing all those things, because containers can't really go into Ukraine. It goes in hub in Europe and then gets transferred to Ukraine, and then there's people just moving those things into places they need. So it's a whole chain of things. It's really amazing to see how it all works from the whole different part of the world, but it does work.
What are you collecting for the container?
Well, everything. There's a lot of stuff coming from some medical place in North Island. They're doing those used wheelchairs and medical beds, some medical supplies like that are close to expiry date or just some that they don't need, whatever. Clothes, some other bits and pieces, like even toys. Somebody has just donated a whole box of toys for kids. You know, so sometimes it's just random, and I guess it's different from one container to the other, but most of container, like at least a couple of last containers would be those medical chairs and beads, and then fill up with those gifts with whatever.
Who can get involved?
Everyone. It's all like people helping with donating things. Then people helping with, because it's all coming in a warehouse, and then you walk in this warehouse and there's random things. So before we put it in containers, there's like people spend their weekends on simply sorting and putting those clothes to toys to medical stuff in separate boxes. Then you need to load container. Then a freight company will help to deliver this container to the port. And all this is just like, so anyone can help to the degree. But I guess donors are helping a lot, and communities helping a lot just to make it happen.
Why do you believe it is important to support Ukraine, especially now?
Well, it was always important, not just now. I guess it's always important because it was invaded. And, well, you just kind of support the people who have been offended by a stupid neighbor who thinks that they can do whatever. And it's vitally important. It's like, could you imagine Australia decides to take over New Zealand? Yeah, that doesn't work in civil world, but it does work over there. So I mean, we need to support those guys, because if not us, who will?
Well, Volodymyr Rodnyansky, together with like-minded individuals from across New Zealand, has already sent 5 containers to Ukraine filled with wheelchairs, medical beds, medicines and other medical equipment, as well as clothing for adults and children and toys. People from all over New Zealand have been collecting, packing and transporting these items to the containers, which are then sent to Ukraine. Here in Dunedin, we also took part in gathering items, medicines and funds for one of the previous containers. I want to express my gratitude to the people of Dunedin, Balclutha and Kaitangata, who collected items, donated medicines, contributed funds and transported packages to Christchurch. Your efforts have made a significant impact on improving the lives of Ukrainians in need. But let Volodymyr tell us more about this wonderful initiative. Can you tell us a little about yourself and what inspired you to bring this project to life?
My name is Vladimir Rodnyansky and I am Vice President of Ukrainian Association of New Zealand Southern Regions. Everything started in 2022, after the full-scale invasion. Idea of supplying medical equipment just came to my mind at one point. That I was sitting at my office and thinking what I can do, what we can do, how can we help from New Zealand. It was not such thing as sending any significant amount of help to Ukraine. I started browsing the internet and I found an organization called Medical Aid Abroad. That's New Zealand-wide organization based head office in Auckland, and I just dialed the number and quickly got a contact of who was quite keen to help. And I think within a couple of months, we got enough of medical equipment for the first container. The first one was from Auckland. We accumulated all this medical equipment in warehouse in Auckland. And in October 2022, we shipped the first container to Dobrovoz in Kyiv. The container went to Poland and then it was transported from Poland to Kyiv and was distributed in Ukraine. After the first container, we couldn't stop. Medical Aid Abroad, they were keen to help and we were getting more and more of this stuff. In 3 or 4 months, we sent another container and then another container. Altogether, we sent 5 containers. At one point, we found that there is a potential in New Zealand, across New Zealand, to collect wheelchairs and used wheelchairs and used medical equipment such as hospital beds and hoists and so on. So far, 5 containers, 2 20-foot containers and 3 40-foot containers. Yeah. It's very valuable and there is a huge demand. Unfortunately, the demand for wheelchairs is enormous in Ukraine because so many Ukrainian soldiers like disabled and they desperately need wheelchairs. There is not enough supply in Ukraine of wheelchairs for soldiers. In mid-2022, I met Hugh Douglas, who is managing director of a weft knitting company. He was very enthusiastic to help us and he gave us significant number of merino garments. And with one of our shipments, we sent merino garments to Ukraine and distributed through our friends who are volunteers in Ukraine. And we need funds to ship 2 40-foot containers to Ukraine, and we need to do it urgently. We have about months to dispatch it. We have a Give a Little page. You can donate money through Give a Little page or contact Ukrainian Association of New Zealand Southern Regions through the website. We have our bank account details there and emails of our administrator.
To find out more about this project, visit the Ukrainian Association of New Zealand Southern Regions website at www.uanzsouth.org.nz or find them on their Facebook page, the Ukrainian Association of New Zealand Southern Regions. thank you for joining us today, and a special thanks to Anatoly Khorozov for sharing his story, his journey, and his ongoing support for Ukraine from across the world. Conversations like this remind us Ukrainians are everywhere, and wherever they are, they care, they act, and they don't give up. If you'd like to share your story and know someone who should be on the next episode, get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay safe, stay strong, and stay connected. Slava Україні! Thank you for tuning in to Borscht Club on ORFM. Stay connected with us and listen to our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and oar.org.nz. This is your host, Оля Вязенко, wishing you joy and a delicious day ahead. До зустрічі! See you next time!
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.